Hello and welcome to Trolling with Logic for 25th of November 2012. It's 6 p.m. GMT, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. We're a bi-weekly podcast for 2000 and internet show covering topics of science, skepticism and atheist. I'm your host, Zulu Fightrunner, and my co-host tonight, Martimar.
Hi, everyone.
Empty.
Hi, everyone.
Kirch.
Hello, everyone.
And just returning to the seat from Skeptic Fence, LibLife.
How's everybody doing tonight? Thanks for having me again on the show. I appreciate it.
No problem at all. We'll be taking questions from the chat room, and if you do want to call in, Skype contact is Trolling with Logic. Just give your name, location, general gist of the question. We'll add you in. Just wait till we introduce you to the call. And by calling in, please remember that all calls are later uploaded to YouTube and iTunes. So by calling in, you're granting permission for us to use your likeness. So I'll hand over to Empty Without Brain, who'll introduce this week's guest.
Okay. I'd like to introduce you all to the one and only asshole from Texas, Matt Dillahunty.
Yay.
Yay, this time.
I'm not the only asshole from Texas, though. I know plenty of assholes in Texas.
You're not alone, then.
Yeah. So, how's it going, Matt, this time?
I'm doing pretty well today. It's been a rough couple weeks. I mean, our house was broken into a week ago Friday, and so we've been dealing with that paperwork and trying to buy a house, and now we've got Thanksgiving and company in town, but put it on the calendar, got my reminder, and got in here. So thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, no problem. Pleasure to have you. So I'll just hand over to the team if you've got questions to start off, and I'll keep my eye in the chat room.
Actually, I just want to start off it. You were going to be a Southern Baptist preacher, as far as I'm aware of. I just want to ask, what was the deconversion process like? Was it how long did that take? What was it like in terms of emotionally?
Yeah, so it's a really, really long story. Basically, I lost my job and was going to go back to be a minister, which is something that I had thought from my teenage years that I was supposed to be, that God wanted me to be. And so I spent about 18 months or so where I was in serious study and prayer and talking to minister friends of mine. And my roommate at the time was an atheist, and we had an agreement that we weren't going to talk about religion. I believed what I believed. He believed what he believed, and that was it. We wanted to stay friends, so there was no point in arguing about it. And when I got serious about going on and being a minister, I felt that I needed to violate that agreement because I didn't want to see my best friend, you know, burning in hell. So I specifically went out to see what it was that atheists were saying about my religious beliefs and wanted to find the best way to combat those arguments. And, of course, I failed spectacularly. But the early on, it was actually liberating. I didn't have a lot of depression or sadness. I didn't, I get emails all the time from people who are talking about how they feel like they've lost something or lost this idea of an afterlife. And I never really felt that. I felt like it was gaining something the entire time, that, you know, I was discovering a truth. It was really liberating. Now, dealing with family members in the process of coming out or being outed, there were a lot of problems in those areas. But for me personally, it just kind of rapidly became obvious. Oh, yes, of course, this is the way things work, and this is true, and this is not demonstrated to be true, so I'm better off not believing it.
Next up.
Yeah, I got a quick one real quick. I'm sure I actually had a lot of people ask me to ask you this. So what are your current thoughts, I should say, with the Atheism Plus movement? There was a lot of major uproar a few months ago about it on YouTube, especially with a lot of the popular YouTubers being against it. Can you give us a breakdown in your current viewpoints on Atheism Plus?
Sure. So when it first started, basically there was discussions in email, and this is where the name came from, and we were having conversations. Actually, I was watching conversations. I wasn't actively involved in it. But it was the principles that they were talking about, we're atheists, but we're also concerned with other things, social justice and equality and feminism, things like that. And those are things that I've always been, you know, well, not always, that I've been supporting for years. So it wasn't any change. And I was like, well, you know, if you want to slap a label on it, that's fine. You know, as long as we've changed the label, because I've been opposed to people kind of trying to redefine things. And that's why when they did the plus label, it seemed kind of obvious to me, oh, this is atheism and these other things. And so, you know, immediately I was like, yeah, I'm not a big fan of that label or any label, but you know, for what it was supposed to be, it seemed to fit. And so I did my part in evangelizing on its behalf. And one of the things early on was they set up a forum and basically said, this is where people can go to have a safe space to talk about Atheism Plus and what we're going to do. And I looked at it as a movement with the forum as kind of the meeting place to talk about, you know, the movement stuff. I didn't participate on the forum. I never went over there and looked. And then there was just butt tons of confusion and misinformation. I did a couple of videos in the car where I was trying to clear things up and let people know at least what my position on this was. You know, as with anything, you're going to find there are atheists that are definitely atheists, and I disagree with them on any number of things. And that's going to be true no matter how you adjust the label or move them around. I'm going to disagree with secular humanists, even though I am one. And then I started hearing from people saying, hey, this forum that you're directing people to isn't what you think it is. And I went over and I took a look around, and it definitely wasn't what I thought it was, but I didn't think it was necessarily anything that was, you know, bad. I thought it had just kind of morphed into, I'm not even sure what, some kind of discussion place where it was very insular. It was a very insular community they built up, and because they were under attack or felt under attack, they got kind of draconian with their forum administration. And I went on because somebody had sent me a message saying, you know, if you went there and disagreed with them about something, you'd be banned. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to just walk into the forum and disagree, make up something to disagree about. So I ignored that. You know, I'm not going to go pretend to be something because that's a troll. And instead, somebody else who's, I'm not going to name, sent me a message and said, look, here's this thread. This person came on and was talking about this. They ended up being banned. Do you agree with that? And I went and looked at the situation, and I was like, I don't think I necessarily agree with what's going on here, so I'll go on and say so. But I already had an account at the forum that I'd never used. Well, I used it once to post and say, hey, this is me, but I'm not going to be participating on the forums.
Yeah.
So I created a new account so that I could go in and, you know, talk to these people. I made a post. It got disapproved by a moderator right away. And I got an email message that says, if you want to, you know, I don't think it's used the word appeal, but if you need to talk to a moderator about this, you know, basically replying, if you'd like to appeal this or talk about it, come to this portion of the forum and you can talk to a moderator. I went over there. There was a bunch of back and forth. Immediately, there were members of the forum who were being snarky and basically saying, hey, you know, nobody knows you from Adam, and you're coming over here and you're disagreeing with a moderator. Well, nobody had seen the content of the post but me and the moderator. Mm-hmm. And eventually, somebody came on and said something which kind of stuck in my craw, that one of the moderators had said something like, well, if you actually participated in the community. And what he was meaning was if you actually participated in the forum community, but I took it to be kind of a broad-based, you know, you're a nobody who's not participating in the community, and so I revealed who I was, and then all hell broke loose. Matt's using a sock puppet, and since then, both my accounts have been banned from the forum, which I'm absolutely fine with. They had a rule, you can't have two accounts. I think it's a stupid rule. I think that I didn't violate the spirit of anything, but, you know, the letter of the law, fine, ban me. But then they said I might be welcome back if I apologized. And I'll take a bullet to the head before I apologize to those individuals on that forum, because I, first of all, they're at the point where they couldn't recognize friend from foe. Nobody saw the content, and yet they were making judgments about the content and about my character, neither of which they knew. They immediately turned from, some of them, not all of them, turned from, oh yeah, Matt's on our side, to Matt is a despicable villain. And it just came together to let me know that there are individuals at the forum who are not being skeptical. They're not, they are, I don't want to put everything on their shoulders, because there's a lot of hatred being directed at them for things that I think should be common sense to advocate for, you know, equality and social justice. So I'm still an advocate of the principles behind Atheism Plus, but I'm not an advocate of the forum in any way, and I don't think that a forum is a movement. When I looked at what Atheism Plus was going to be, it was supposed to be about doing things. And you don't do things on a forum. What you do on a forum is you talk about doing things. And I'd actually rather be out there doing it. So I don't, and I, as I said, you know, even early on before any of the incidents with the forum happened, I don't care what you call yourself. I mean, atheist, humanist, I'm an atheist and a humanist. I'm an Atheism Plus. So you use whatever label you want. If you're a decent human being who's working towards, you know, equality and the betterment of the world, then hey, we're on the same team, whether you call yourself Raging Asshole 145.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, anything I really didn't agree with, that's okay if you want to have different viewpoints on different ideologies, that's fine. But I just felt that using the word atheist with a plus basically was dividing the atheist community because, you know, in the United States here, at least in the United States, I'm like, the numbers of atheists and the non-religious in general demographic has just grown immensely in the last, you know, since 2005, 2008, whatever poll you look at. And I just think, if it's not broke, why are you trying to fix it? You know what I mean? So it's like...
Well, because it was broke.
It was broke?
Oh, well, see, the thing is, I don't think this... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I didn't mean Atheism Plus was broke. I'm just saying, in general, if we're doing a good job, the numbers are rising, especially in the United States. I'm like, why are you trying this other concept? I'm like, come up with another name like the Brights or, you know, New Atheism. That really took off a little bit better than Brights did. But, you know, I just felt like using a different name. I'm like, that's just my own opinion. Yeah.
Well, I agree with you, and I liked the fact that they did come up with a different name. The thing is that I didn't see this as dividing the atheist community. I see it as recognizing a divide that exists, because if you're an atheist, there's no guarantee that you're a skeptic. There's no guarantee that you're an advocate, that you're a humanist or an advocate of equality. And so there are people who are out there trying to do these things, and there are other individuals who are atheists who are, you know, actively standing in opposition. And there are a bunch of people in the middle who, you know, really don't know where they should be. So it wasn't, to me, about creating a divide as much as recognizing a divide and saying... And by the way, as it was entirely opt-in, there's no top-down strategy. I mean, it's part of the problem. The part of the problem is not having any kind of top-down structure, any kind of authority, because now all of a sudden it can be anything to anybody, and that means it can be or a movement or nothing, you know.
I see what you're saying. All right. Thanks, I appreciate that.
Okay, we do have a caller for you, Matt. And it's Matt in Scotland. And I think he wants to talk about the clam argument with you.
Oh, okay.
So just waiting for him to come in.
I think he might have emailed me.
Do you recognize the name?
No, I recognize the face while he's loading up his Skype.
Yeah. He's very active on Twitter, this guy.
Ah, that's probably where I saw it.
Hello, Matthew. You there? Please pick up.
No.
I'll just send him a message right now. Matthew? Oh, crikey.
Yeah?
Any luck?
He says he's not getting a call.
What?
Wow, you've actually got some idiots in your chat room talking about feminism.
We were sort of expecting that tonight.
Yeah.
Hello, well, Matthew.
I think maybe I can clear this up real quick, and that is that, like a lot of other... Oh, I'm getting a lot of static. I don't know who that is.
That's Matthew, can you just mute for a second while Matt finishes his thought?
Yeah, no problem.
So the like many things, the word feminism has a number of different meanings to a number of different people, and it most definitely I would agree. There are some batshit crazy, evil, man-hating feminists out there, and they do what they do, and they call it feminism. Just like there are some batshit crazy, evil MRA folks out there, and they'll actually try to call it equality or whatever.
Yeah.
But when I use the word feminism, and when the people that I associate use the word feminism, all we're talking about is this idea that men and women are equal, and that we haven't reached the state where society views it that way, so we're going to keep working on the problem end. I'm not, you know, I mean, if you listen to the last talk that I did on this, I'm talking about, you know, that there are men's rights issues that we need to address, but that men's rights issues also fall under some of the things that we're dealing with in advocating for feminism. That when you fix the patriarchy, you fix some of those problems as well. But I think the term misogyny is way overused. I think that there are people who are way too acerbic on all sides of the issue. But what's really strange is I see people making these broad-based, I mean, even in the chat, oh, feminism is just, you know, I'm a woman, give me money, or feminism is men are evil, or whatever else. That's not what I'm talking about, and my friends that people know, Rebecca and Greta and everybody, that's not the feminism they're talking about. It's like people went out to the internet and found the worst bits of feminism and said, oh, no, that's evil. Yeah, it is. But what we're talking about is not. Anyway, thanks for joining us, Matthew. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Okay, you have the floor, Matthew. Ask your question.
Yeah, I want to know what your opinion is of Stephen Hawking's hypothesis that the universe, because there is a law such as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. Because to me that sounds like a self-contradiction. A thing cannot create itself, certainly not from nothing, because out of nothing, nothing comes. And if there was nothing, then there could not be something, i.e. the law of gravity.
Okay, well, first of all, not a physicist, not particularly, I don't have any expertise in this area to make any comment. You know, what I can say is that what you mean by nothing and what physicists mean by nothing are not the same thing.
When Stephen Hawking is using nothing, he makes it clear he's talking about absolutely nothing. He's not doing a word game like physicist Lawrence Krauss, who says, hey, listen, I'm going to answer the age-old philosophical question, why is there something rather than nothing? And then he gets everyone's attention with his book title. Then what he does is he changes the word nothing from its philosophical definition in the question to something, which is empty space. So all he's doing is saying, hey, here's how you can get a universe from something. So what? We all know that anyway. Hawking is using the word...
I wouldn't say we all knew that, but...
No, we do all
okay.
know.
Can you let Dillahunty talk? Otherwise, it's going to be difficult to talk. Can you let him speak, please?
So, first of all, I'm not Hawking, so mm-hmm. I can't. What?
Obviously. You're Dillahunty, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry for stating the obvious. What a waste of time that was.
Correct.
My point is that You're asking me questions about what Stephen Hawking means? Maybe you should ask him, because I can't speak for him, and I find it rather weird. I find it rather weird that you say you represent Hawking as talking about a philosophical nothing, and yet you don't want to recognize that Hawking also does not believe a god is required for this. So you want to cite him when it seems convenient for you and ignore him when it's not convenient for you.
No, I don't want to ignore him at all. Stephen Hawking is a genius, an absolute genius. He has contributed more to science than most other scientists have ever had. His book, The Brief History of Time, Grand Design. What I will do is, you say that you're not Hawking, so you can't speak for him. So let me ask you a question that I would assume that you would be able to answer. Can a thing create itself? Can you give me an example of a single thing that creates itself? Just one example.
Well, I first of all, I object to the use of the word creates, because I think that's a cheat to kind of move an idea in.
That's Hawking's word, not my word. That's the word.
I don't give a shit what Hawking's word is.
Okay, let's change it then. Can something make itself come into being by itself?
Not as far as I know, but I can't say that it's impossible. You can't say that it's impossible just because you don't have an example.
It's not impossible for something to create itself from itself. But you can't give me a single example in physics, in philosophy, in logic, nowhere in the whole world of empirical knowledge, observation, anywhere.
Do you understand the black swan fallacy? Do you understand the black swan fallacy that you sitting here pointing and saying that...
Arthur, can you let Dillahunty speak, please?
Yeah, but he needs to stop saying something sensible.
Yeah. Can you listen and then he'll respond to your point?
I tell you what, in about a minute I'm going to say, no, 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 you're done.
Yeah, okay? Of course, you don't have any answer, that's why.
Are you going to let me answer? This is my point. The fact that I don't have an answer is irrelevant to your assertion that it's impossible. And the fact, even if nobody had an answer, that does not mean that it's impossible. You are asserting something. What?
Correct. Yeah, I agree with you.
Great. Thanks. So don't try to put a burden of proof on me to prove that what you're saying...
I'm only asking you some questions. I was challenged by atheists to come and speak to you because they told me you were a guy with the answers. You were some guy I should be afraid of as a Christian theist.
No. Why are you going on about what's impossible? You see, because
certain things are impossible.
Yes, like, I agree.
For example, a self-contradiction is impossible. A married bachelor is impossible.
I agree. I understand this. This is logic 101.
Exactly. So what I'm proposing to you is that for something to create itself from itself is an example of a self-contradiction.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Exactly. So Stephen Hawking, who proposes that the universe creates itself from itself, why not?
I'll tell you why not. Because here's the thing, you're engaged in a little bit of an equivocation fallacy. I would agree that in the strictest terms, something cannot create itself because it would have had to exist in order to do it. I'm fine with that. But you're misrepresenting, I can't say you're misrepresenting Hawking because I don't have him here and I don't have his quote right here. But the way you're phrasing it is an equivocation fallacy because you're taking this and saying the universe couldn't have created itself because it would have had to exist. And what I'm saying is that when there's an equivocation fallacy there about what the universe is, because there is the local reference point of the universe from the Big Bang on, and then there is the something of space. Now,
space began with the universe, with the Planck time. That's when space time began.
Okay, that's where space-time began, but we don't know what was before that, and it's nonsensical to talk about.
Yeah, you can't get that.
It's nonsensical to talk about before that because that is, the time began there.
Okay, so answer me this question. If it's not sensible to talk about before the Big Bang, why had the physicist, who also worked with Stephen Hawking, why has he produced a series of lectures titled Before the Big Bang? Sir Roger Penrose, you might be familiar with him.
I can't answer.
Why is this?
Can I answer?
Yeah, sorry.
Matthew, can you let Dillahunty answer, please?
I didn't mean to interrupt. I wasn't quite finished my statement.
I can't tell you why they chose to word it that way or talk about it, but I can say that it's an interesting proposition to try to find out what's before the universe. And one of the reasons that physicists do it is because people in your worldview have been making a bazillion claims about before the universe and outside the universe forever with no justification. These are things just pulled out of your ass. And so you object to my language?
And you can't keep your language within the borders of the boundary of respect for who you're speaking to, a Christian theist. I won't offend you by calling you an idiot because you're an atheist.
First of all, dipshit, I didn't call you a name until just now. Do you feel better? I mean, you clearly wanted me to call you a name, which is why you accused me of calling you a name when I hadn't.
I didn't.
Do you feel better now?
What I was doing was using an analogy. If I came on here and said, hey, Matt Dillahunty, you know what? You're an idiot. Why are you an idiot? You're an idiot because you're an idiot.
Matthew, can we keep it civil?
Let him finish. We're talking about this.
I'm not calling him an idiot. I know the guy's not an idiot, okay? I'm not saying he is. I'm using an analogy. I'm saying if I did that would be unnecessarily offensive and disrespectful.
You objected to my language. What exactly did I say that you found objectionable?
You said all about something about us and all that kind.
Yes, I said that there's no evidence for it. I said that the religious people have been making assertions about before the Big Bang and outside of time and existence outside of time, things for which there are no evidence, and I said that you are pulling them out of your ass. That is an idiom for this claim of yours is unjustified. If you're just going to object to the word ass,
what claim have
when
I made?
Wasn't calling, I didn't call you an ass.
Can you tell me what claim of me that you just referred to?
Sorry.
You referred there to the claims that I have made. I'm asking you, can you tell me what claims that I have made on this call to you, our first time of meeting? What claims have I made?
You are a Christian?
Yes, Christian theist, yes.
And you believe in a God that exists outside of and before time?
Outside of time, no. I believe in a God who exists without the universe. It's nonsense to talk about before time. It's nonsense to talk about outside of the universe. So
your God is inside the universe?
Yes.
Where was he before the universe?
Again, there's no before the universe.
I know.
I'm talking about. So why are you using that phrase then? If you know, why are you saying it?
Then your God...
In here and
yeah, go ahead.
If you know it's wrong, why are you saying it?
I'd just like to... The whole before the universe, there's a language issue here. We have no word that means before time. That's why we use the word before. What is it?
We can use two ways to describe it. The first way we can talk about is logically prior to, which takes away any idea of temporality, temporal means.
But
logically prior, or we can say without the universe and with the universe. Without and with. No, there's no indication of any time involved when you say without the universe, a zombie exists.
Yes.
Or something existed.
So, you think the universe and time began to exist at some point?
Yes. So does Stephen Hawking, and so does.
I understand. And I don't care about. Wow.
You don't care about physicists and cosmologists and what they say about the universe and when it began?
I don't know why it's relevant, why when I ask you a question about what you believe, you feel like you need to add clout from other people, who could also be wrong, by the way.
I'll tell you why. Because I am a layperson. I am not an authority in science and cosmology and physics. So my opinion as a layperson doesn't carry any weight with any audience. But if I give my opinion as a layperson and I can point to authority in those fields, then for any person who also accepts those people as authority, I'm making what's called a valid appeal to authority. Do you recognize that?
Yeah, I'm asking why on earth you would do that on something that we don't agree on. You just seem to want to make sure that you're expounding on everything when I had gotten to the very beginning of my question.
What don't we agree on so far that we've spoken about?
Well, that the universe had a beginning.
So is our universe expanding?
Yes. In general?
Okay, so are you a physicist?
No.
Are you a cosmologist?
No.
Okay, so Alexander Evalenkin, Guth Bohr theorem, what they have stated, any universe that is in general expanding had a cosmic beginning.
See, this is exactly what I'm talking about. I just said, Matthew, we agree on this, so why are you giving me a dissertation on something that I just said we agree on?
I thought you said that you don't agree the universe had a beginning.
No, I just said I did. If you would stop interrupting me so quick, I could get to my point and you would...
Yes. Go ahead.
Matthew, could you let Dillahunty speak? Otherwise, we're not able, we can't hear a thing. Could you let him speak, please?
So, here's the thing. We're both lay people. I don't have any information in front of me. So, citing other people is a waste of time in this sort of conversation. I'm trying to get to understand where we actually disagree. And what I was talking about a minute ago is your position that there's some God who is the creative force behind the universe, I'm presuming.
I wouldn't call God a creative force, no. That's impersonal. God is a personal being, a personal agent, a being like you and me.
Can you give me a single example of a personal being that doesn't exist within the universe?
God.
How do you know that there's a God?
I know
you haven't given me an example, you've just given me an assertion, a label.
Okay. I know there's a God because I know that there is a valid epistemology, which is rationalism, combined with another valid epistemology, which is empiricism. And that's how proper science operates. Proper science does not operate on empiricism alone, but on a combination of rationalism and empiricism.
Which doesn't confirm your God.
No, well, if you let me continue, I'll try to give you some idea of where I get my idea from. Get the idea that God, and when I say God, I'm just referring to God generically. I'm not referring to Yahweh or Allah, anything like that. You could refer it to as the deist God, the God of deism. Okay?
Sure.
So what I do is I look at empirical facts. Things that are empirically observable, which you and me both accept. The universe exists. Contingent beings exist. Fine-tuning in the universe exists.
No, it doesn't. No.
Well, Okay, once again, you're speaking as a layperson. All I can do when I'm speaking to you, let's not focus then on what we disagree on. Let's focus on what we agree on. The universe exists. We agree on that.
Yep.
Okay? Contingent beings exist. We agree on that.
Contingent how?
You know what I can. You know what it means to be.
I know what the word means, but I know that I also know that it can be used in an existential sense as well. Go ahead.
A contingent being would be any being which can not exist.
Yes.
So me and you, we are examples of beings that can not exist.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. So you'll miss out fine-tuning because you don't agree on that. You probably won't agree with objective moral values and duties that they exist.
Actually, I do.
Excellent. So that's another thing. That's another thing we agree on. And you definitely won't agree. Well, you should do, but you probably won't agree with accepting facts in New Testament scholarship about the person of Jesus. Natural fact, not supernatural fact, like, for instance, the empty tomb, his post-mortem appearances, and the origin...
Whoa, you're calling post-mortem appearances natural facts?
Yes, let me give you an example.
A dead person appearing to people and ascending bodily to heaven is a natural fact?
Let me give you an example how that could be natural. Let's imagine Jesus never died on the cross.
Okay.
Let's imagine he took some sort of sedative. Okay.
Is that what you believe? Because I don't want to engage it if it's not what you believe.
No, it's not what I believe. I'm giving you an example of how it could. You challenge me on whether you could get a natural post-mortem appearance of Jesus.
Okay.
I'm explaining to you the process by which that can happen. Do you understand where I'm going with it?
I understand. Basically, you're saying
how
that
was it,
the events...
How is it post-mortem if he were alive the whole time?
Yeah,
that mean by definition that he would have had to die?
No. By post-mortem, what you're talking about in that scenario would be the perception by
the point of view.
Okay.
Those people would say, yeah. And so the curious thing here is that you've just admitted and offered up a naturalistic explanation for the events of the New Testament. And yet that's not what you believe. You believe a supernatural explanation is more probable than the natural one.
Yes. Why do I believe that?
That's a good question.
Excellent. And here's the basis of it. What I referred to at the beginning was accepted facts by New Testament scholars, the majority of New Testament scholars about Jesus. They accept the empty tomb, the post-mortem appearances, and the origin of the disciples' belief that Jesus was resurrected. Those aren't controversial statements to make in the field of New Testament scholars by people like, for example, Bart Ehrman, who is an agnostic, not a Christian, can't be pointed at and said, oh, he's protecting his
people. I know who Bart is.
Excellent. So those there, and then what you go on to is, what is the best explanation for those three facts? And that's where you get into all the, well, you have the supernatural explanation that he actually was resurrected. And then you have all the other conspiracy theories, hypotheses. And where we get excluded is with those same New Testament scholars who don't hold them as having any credibility at all. They think they are not saying, yeah, Jesus was resurrected. But on a historical level, they're saying, no, this did not really die on the cross thing. The way the Romans executed criminals on the cross or on whatever you want to call it, on a regular basis. They were professional killers. They knew what they were doing. They're not going to mess up with...
Are you getting to like some point or a question here? Because
The point I'm trying to make is You ask me how I get my belief in God. To make it briefly, I take those empirical observations. Let's put the Jesus one to the side again. We both agree on the first few
No. We didn't just spend 10 minutes with you giving us a sermon about Jesus to set it aside.
The message is that we have another color rating, okay? We
are not for time. I will address this as...
So I'm trying to wind things up so that you're left with an idea of how I formulate my belief in God. Is that reasonable?
I understand. Can I address it now?
Yes. Well, I haven't explained it, but how can you address what I've not explained?
Matthew, can you just let him respond to the points that you have made?
What you're doing is assuming... Well, no, that's not fair. You have concluded that a supernatural explanation is more likely, more plausible, than any number of other explanations. And in part, you're doing this because you have looked at some plausible explanations and dismissed them as too absurd. And yet you have no criteria by which you can establish how likely a supernatural explanation is. And so you are making a terrible mistake because you are claiming that something for which you cannot possibly determine plausibility is more plausible than something for which you can.
No, incorrect. But go on.
Okay. But go on?
Yeah, I mean, all you've done is make a statement about what you believe. You've not actually showed any error in my logic or my thinking. Or
yes,
else.
I just did.
What I said to you was that the New Testament scholar, the same New Testament scholar who accept those facts about Jesus, disregard those natural explanations.
No, they don't.
Give me an example of the majority. I'm talking about the majority of New Testament scholars.
So you'll cite Bart Ehrman,
yes,
but you want to ignore him when he doesn't agree with your conclusion.
On what?
He doesn't think that's a supernatural explanation.
Yes, exactly. But what I'm saying is he would agree with me on how you get to the best explanation.
No, he doesn't, or you would agree. This isn't... See, you seem to have this idea of best explanation as that idea which explains all the facts, and that's not the best explanation. The best explanation is the one that is most plausible, the one that is best supported by evidence. If you make an appeal to just the best explanation, then God is always going to be the best explanation for everything because God is a panacea that is defined in such a way as to explain everything. You cannot solve a mystery by appealing to a bigger mystery.
Let me give you one quick example, okay?
I don't know.
If science were to discover a new planet tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
and on that planet, they found on that planet a very complex mechanical structure, would it be reasonable for them to make the assumption that something designed and put that structure and created that structure on that planet?
I don't know. I'd have to have more information about what they actually found.
Matthew, the key point here is the fact that you'll need evidence and you'll need an explanation to explain the evidence, to explain your claim.
By what you're saying, you seem to be implying that we recognize design by virtue of it being complex, and that's simply false.
Not complex. What I said to you was, scientists find a new planet, and on that planet, they find a mechanical, complex, piece of machinery. If you want to put it that way.
You're not defining things. See, by saying it's a complex piece of machinery, you are putting labels on it that make it fall into the category of design. It's the same thing as when creationists say creation needs a creator. Well, they're cheating by calling it creation. It's not creation until you've established that there is a creator. It's not a machine. It's not a structure. It's not a design until you've established that there's a designer. And we determine design by contrasting with that which is naturally occurring.
I'm not trying to establish the fine-tuning argument. I'm pointing to a designer. Okay?
Yeah. All I understand.
Sorry, guys. Can I come in for you?
Yeah, okay. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah. Matthew, what are you going to do? If you're going to explain there is a designer, something responsible for it, you've got to explain it. And you've got to give evidence to explain how he did it. How your god did it, or any other god.
But that's the point I'm trying to make. That if scientists were to find this new planet, and on that planet they found something, a mechanical structure of some sort, something they recognized as a mechanical structure, they would come to the conclusion, and reasonably come to the conclusion, that that was designed and put there by something, even although they could give no explanation whatsoever of what the something was, where it came from, how it did what it did. Does anyone disagree that scientists would come to that
conclusion? What does this have to do with your original point?
Yeah.
The original point was going about, because Matt Dillahunty was making references there that you cannot just posit an explanation, you need to explain the explanation. You don't need to have an explanation.
No.
You need an explanation.
Here's the thing. You're Matthew.
Matthew, can you let Dillahunty speak?
You're cheating in two different ways here. You've created a hypothetical, and you said we get to a planet and we find a device there. How did we determine that it was a device? Let me give you a simpler example. No. You don't just look at it. You get evidence. But if, for example, you...
I thought that was nonsense. Listen, on the planet Mars...
You said that's nonsense?
On the planet Mars right now...
No. Stop. You just say that was nonsense?
Let him speak, please.
Nonsense, yes.
No, sir. If you'd let me finish, you'd understand, I hope, that it's not nonsense. You don't just... do it by looking at it, which is what you said. That is nonsense. You think that you can just recognize design intuitively, and that's not the case. When, in fact, that's what you implied with your just looking at it, and by claiming that my position here about evidence basis is nonsense, that's what you're implying. No, you can't say a damn thing right now. You've been talking for 5 minutes. Let me finish this thought.
Go ahead.
Do you want me to finish the thought, or do you want to just go away?
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, but what you're not doing, you're not having a discussion. You're trying to preach what you believe to me.
I think if you watch this video back, you'll find that you've talked about twice as much as I have.
Yeah, and rightly so. Rightly so.
Rightly so.
Yeah, because I am the person coming on to the show to ask you questions to try
then
to
wait
get
for the damn answers. Answers, or you can go somewhere else.
Yeah, well, give an answer, but give a sensible answer.
Are you... Matthew, just listen to Dillahunty, please.
I swear to the God you're believing in, if you interrupt me one more fucking time and disregard this as nonsense before I can finish a sentence, are you done? Oh, is it because I said fuck? Does that bother you?
No, I can sense your frustration at the whole conversation.
Yes, and if I was interrupting you every 2 seconds to tell you that it was nonsense, I think you'd be a little frustrated too.
I've only said one time to you what you've said is nonsense.
Oh, that's true.
Okay.
Now, do you want me to answer what you've talked about or not?
Yes, try to get to a point, yes.
Hang up on this piece of shit.
If you let him get to the point.
All right. So just in case he's watching after the fact, imagine you're walking along and you find in a river a bunch of sticks put together that are blocking up the river. Now, there's a number of possibilities. One is that some flood or instance pushed those sticks together naturally and they formed a little dam. And there's another possibility that something like a beaver did that. Now, we only know that because we already know about beavers. But you can look at that collection of sticks, and you examine it, and you determine how likely it is that this occurred by natural circumstances, and do we have any mechanism by which it could have occurred by natural circumstances? And that's how we recognize design, by contrasting what occurs naturally with what is not known to occur naturally. That is the evidence that we accumulate. However, we can't make a claim about what actually built, or even use the word built, that dam, or call it a creation, until we have some evidence of the beaver. We could say, we don't know how this happened, we can say we've seen instances where things like this occur naturally, or we've never seen anything like this occur naturally, and so we are stumped. But we do not have an explanation until we have actually accumulated enough evidence to say, hey, this was most probably built by this little thing with a flat tail.
Yeah.
And there's your I just wanted to say that I have to give up on the Ustream because it was just interfering too much with Skype, that it was just coming in as robot, basically. So I'll try to fix that for next week.
Yeah. Okay, doke.
Yeah, I get really frustrated with the whole language issue, as I mentioned, with before time being very interested in cosmology. I run into this all the time, where, you know, when it comes to causality in the absence of time, I mean, how do you explain that something happens before something when you can't use the word before?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of scientists have the same problem. They use the word before in the absence of a better word.
There's a lot of problems with language, and it's something, I mean, I wish that I hadn't, you know, let him frustrate me, but there's only so many times I can start talking and be interrupted. But the thing is, there are real problems with language and how we describe things. And it may be that the concepts were falsely formed and have just kind of lingered around, and so we don't even have good concepts for what we're talking about. But there's another thing where Christians and believers, and I'll stick with Christians since that's primarily what we're talking about, but they have, there's some kind of block preventing them on many occasions from recognizing the problem with the language they use. You see it with guys like Ray Comfort, who are saying, well, creation requires a creator. Well, you can't call it that to begin with. And there's a lot of little things like this when you're talking about existence and before, as you pointed out. It's very frustrating. And, you know, maybe I don't know how to solve it other than to keep kind of hammering the points home.
Yeah. Okay. Goku, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, you're on with Matt. Ask your question.
Okay. This is actually not my question, it's a friend's question. I'm an atheist. He's a fundamentalist Christian, and he keeps asking me this, and I give him my answer, and it never works. So I want your answer. Why do atheists care and concern so much about Christianity and how it's hurting us or our society with the first? It's not currently affecting or even influencing laws or legislation. It still confronts almost a billion people, even with the size of number, still can't even change Roe versus Wade or return prayer to school. The fact is, we are winning, atheists, the country, and much of the public, and many Christians even admit that.
Sure. I can tell you why I care. First of all, it's because I care about what's actually true. I also don't agree with their assertion with regard to laws. Yes, I agree we are winning. The reason we care is because, or the reason we should care, in my opinion, is that we would like to keep winning, that we would like to minimize the impact that religion has. If they think that religion does not still have a serious impact on laws, like, for example, in the United States or elsewhere, they're just not paying attention. And so as an atheist, I'm not just standing in opposition to Christianity on the whole. I'm in opposition to all religious claims. And actually, as a skeptic, I'm in opposition to all unproven woo-type claims. But when you look, for example, at the people in the United States, and I apologize for staying focused on my troubled country, but it's where I live. Look at the people who are elected to office and the types of legislature legislative initiatives that they engage in. There's been a constant attack, an order of magnitude increase in the number of attempts to make abortion, for example, illegal. It's going to be legal until the Supreme Court turns, you know, and then they may be actually be able to take out the Roe v. Wade as precedent. But they have still managed to make it effectively illegal in many places. And they've done this, I think, in places like Mississippi. For the entire state, there's like one or two facilities for an entire state that can even do this. There are other initiatives that they've put in to make it more and more difficult for these facilities to run. But setting aside the abortion issue, which isn't even necessarily having anything to do with atheism, how many atheists do we have in elected offices? And when you have Ten Commandments monuments places, when you have a climate that shows a lot of preference for religious believers, you are marginalizing your secular citizens, and you should be representing them equally. My goal is never to get rid of religion by legislation. I would never make religion illegal. I will make harmful acts illegal, whether they're spawned from religion or not. You don't get to use your religion as an excuse to actually do, you know, harm. But I want people to give up religion on their own, based entirely on reason and evidence. But the big thing is that every false belief you have means you're at risk of believing other false things. Beliefs don't live – I mean, you try to compartmentalize some things, but everything you believe has the potential of impacting every other thing you believe. And if you're gullible enough to believe in a zombie apocalypse on Jerusalem and rising dead and loaves and fishes and walking on water, then you're also at risk for believing other things. Right down to, not every Christian believes in demons and devils and things, but there are Christians who think that Ouija boards are actually people contacting Satan, and that the people that they meet, you know, walking down the street who aren't believers are agents of an evil being that's trying to take them over. I want to help people free their minds from the shackles of religion because I believe that the whole world will be better off. Now, why wouldn't anybody want to do that?
I agree.
Yeah, and I just want to add, I also really would object, given recent events, that religion causes no harm in legislation, or what's it, there isn't this kind of religious, this kind of religious edge on legislation. We have here in Ireland a very grey area when it comes to abortion. It led to what possibly was a death, but as we know at the moment, this woman was put through torture because of this led to grey area in legislation. And I say that was probably one of the reasons. This is just trying to get the separation of the church and state here in Ireland. It's one of the reasons why I'm in trying to separate church and state, trying to get secular education, a secular constitution, and getting healthcare supported. Trying to get healthcare away from religion, that healthcare decisions are made by doctors and not bishops. I messed that up there.
I want to make sure everybody gets a chance to talk and answer, but just one quick thing. I happen to have Twitter open, and I happen to follow Pastor John Hagee in San Antonio, who's a complete buffoon. But here's what he just tweeted literally 1 minute ago. You're worth something because God says you're worth something, not because of what people think or say about you. Now, to a Christian, and we're talking about the language problems here, to a Christian, that feels great. Hey, it doesn't matter what other people think of me because God thinks I'm great. But the message it's sending is that you are only worth something because God says you're worth something. It completely destroys any hope of self-esteem and, the fact of the matter is you should feel like you're worth something because you think you're worth something. I mean, yes, we imbue value. And, you know, for example, Matthew, who was just on here, he has some measure of his own self-worth, and I have a measure of my own self-worth, and we have some value for each other that's probably a non-zero value. I'd like to see, every person. I think every person has some value to me. That's not true for everybody. But, it's about this kind of personal self-worth. And when you've got pastors out there who are tweeting these messages to kind of keep this cycle of valuelessness and despair going. I don't hate religious people, but I hate Christianity and I hate other religions with a passion. I've seen what they do to people, and the sad thing is that in much the same way that drugs and alcohol have had an effect on people, they can be happy even though these drugs are destroying their life. That's exactly the same way I feel about religion.
Yeah, I'll add on top of that because I'm right aboard with you there, Matt. I always say in my shows that I'm against the idea of religion, especially when they're trying to implement it into laws, politics, education, so on and so forth. I'm totally against it. I don't hate the person that believes. It's either they were low in their life, they were saved, or they were indoctrinated into the religion. Now, I mean, like, this past election just proves that our nation is divided. You know, people are becoming more skeptical to a certain point, especially when it comes to women's reproductive rights, civil rights, when it comes to the gay marriage issue. And, you know, the Tea Party took a big hit, so did the Republicans at a certain point. And you know what? That's just showing society right now that we're not going to put up with this type of, biblical atrocities, I should say. You know, in the immoral codes in their Bible, they're just immoral. I mean, like, look at the abortion clinics that closed since 1999. There was over, 1,700. Now we only have 670 left in the United States. Like Matt was saying, that there was only two in one state. You know, this is what we fight for, man. This is what we fight against, I should say. You know, we don't want this into society. And, if you have your faith, you can go to church, you can preach it all you want. That's fine. But you know what? It has no way it should be ever implemented into society when it comes, what I said, law, politics, or education. That's the end of the story there, you know. That's how I look at it.
Well, Mike, you go next.
I was just kind of that a person's religious beliefs should not influence what they perceive in the slightest.
Yeah. I was going to respond to Matt's point regarding Yoke saying if God loves you, it doesn't matter whether people think God loves you. In my opinion, that allows the person to not be self-reflective on how they've behaved and what they've done. Because if you were to think that of anything, because understanding what other people think of you is, you know, gives you the ability to reflect on what you've done and how it's impacted upon the individual or group. Rather than in some situations, can be a bit of a bitch because you can get bullies and stuff. I understand that. But in general, say for instance, if your family were to say what you've done was bad because of the result of it, and you didn't say understand that because you know, God loves me, that's it. They just want to have them progress or move on or get on with their lives. It'll just make themselves look like a complete dickhead.
Yeah, one quick thing, 2 seconds I want to take here. One thing I do want to add here, which is very important, is that you're going to see in the very near future, in my opinion, that you're going to see these devout Christians, these very extreme Christian people in America, they're going to get more extreme in their viewpoints, especially when it comes to gay rights, women reproductive rights, so on and so forth. They're going to get more extreme because they know they're losing the battle, okay? And it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better, I think. That's my own opinion. I don't know, Matt, what you think about that.
I think you're going to see some backlash for sure, and I don't know how much worse it might get before it actually gets better. I think we're currently on a trend of it getting fairly consistently better. This is one of my big complaints. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to be going down the Freethinkers Association of Central Texas has graciously awarded me the Catherine Ferringer Freethinker of the Year Award. So I'm going down for the acceptance dinner, and I love the Freethought groups, and I love the fact that they're involved right now. But if you go back a little over a century ago, when Freethought in the United States was perhaps at its height, and you had people like Colonel Robert Greene Ingersoll. He was known as the Great Agnostic. He spoke at the Republican National Convention, and he had debates with theologians. And what happened, I think, I'm not a historian, but this is my impression, is that the free thinkers kind of got it in their head, oh, we've got this religion thing whipped. We've managed to beat it. Look, we're getting all new kinds of scientific evidence. You know, the evidence for evolution helps kind of back up what we're saying, that there's no God necessary for these big issues, these big questions. And they said, let the masses who aren't you know, among the intellectual elite. Let them have their religion. You know, it's going to fade away. It's going to be gone. And they kind of got arrogant, and they dismissed a lot of this stuff. And then look what happened. We had a massive backlash in the United States in the 50s under McCarthy era stuff, where now we've got In God We Trust all over our money. We've got Ten Commandments monuments in front of courthouses. And some of these people kind of said, hey, what happened? I thought we had this thing licked. Well, it teaches us the value, and this goes to Goku's question, of being tenacious. You cannot think that you've managed to beat down all irrational thoughts, because that's never going to happen. I'm convinced religion will be with us forever in some form. I'm with, you know, like P.Z. Myers and other P.Z. I think P.Z. said he wishes it was as popular as knitting. I hope it's a lot less popular than knitting, or maybe he didn't say popular. Maybe he was talking about the effectiveness of it. I hope it's down around where the flat Earth society is, because you don't hear politicians advocating for the flat Earth society.
Something that I wanted to mention, I think Long Life mentioned it, about the election, and right around the there was a video, I obviously didn't see when it was uploaded, from Trump, who said Obama won, but the people wanted Mitt Romney as the president, so we should rise up and do a revolution. And the point is he would never have said that if it was the other way around. Now, obviously, Obama won the popular vote also, and he didn't give it time to let things sit. But they have this mindset that if they lose, they need a revolution, but if they win, that's the way it's meant to be, so leave it alone.
Well, Yeah, there's a whole bunch of hypocrisy there, and as soon as you start digging into politics, it can get really ugly. I think you're going to see some of this from either side. Yes, I think you're going to see it from one side more than another. I'd like us to redo how elections work in the United States. I'm an advocate of getting rid of the Electoral College, and having an instant runoff type election that was based entirely on the popular vote. I hope that we can, you know, we're entering a technological age where it might even be possible to just vote on your cell phone, you know, type thing. I think we're not quite there as far as security, but I'd like to see that stuff, and that'll put the nonsense on the back burner. It's never going to get rid of it. Somebody's going to be calling for revolution and for taxes to secede every time there's an election, pretty much.
Well, hasn't the vote only won, or say could have won, I should say, only a handful of times, a few times in the United States history?
Yeah, I think it's
like three.
Four.
Yeah,
I think it's three times. The most recent one was with Al Gore,
mm-hmm.
Which I think that was a completely. I'm one of those that I actually think he was cheated out of his win, but that's beside the point. And that was 12 years ago, so it's no longer.
You got the whole Karl Rove thing busting down with Anonymous saying that he had, he stopped the votes from Ohio, you know, put them all the way over to Tennessee and then came back a couple minutes later and the votes changed for that state. I don't know. That's that whole hypocrisy going on right now, so I don't know anything too much about it, but I heard about it, so.
Yeah.
Okay, Goku, are you? Is that you?
Thanks for answering my question. I just want to say I am an atheist. I am there with you. I am fighting. I am part of groups, and I am trying to do my small part. I even have a YouTube channel out there. Don't have a lot of success with it right now. But, we all need to fight, and I've been an atheist for most of my life, but unfortunately I wasn't a skeptic for most of my life. Now I can probably say I am a skeptic.
Right. Yeah, on top of that, I agree with you 110% there. It's like it doesn't matter if you have two subscribers, if you're on YouTube and you're being an activist on YouTube. It doesn't matter if you have two subscribers or 20 million. It doesn't matter. As long as somebody does their job, get your voice out there, as long as you get one or two people to look at your own viewpoint and make them think, that's what it's all about, man. Everybody should be able to do some kind of activism, and it's going to help in the long run.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Have a good day, and I'm out.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Thank you, Colin.
Okay, guys, you just go with questions, and there's still loads of things going on in the background on Skype right now, so. So take it away, team, please.
Sure.
What questions?
Go ahead, Gitch.
Just anyone questions. So, like I said, I'm just doing
Actually, I just saw it on my desk. I just want to ask Matthew if he's heard about the Vita case. I don't think I saw the AT experience last week, so I'm not sure if you guys addressed that.
I'm not sure either.
The one who died in Galway.
Yeah. I'm not sure if they addressed it either. I haven't actually been on the show for several weeks because, well, last week we got broken into. This week I've got a company in town. I'll be on next week with Daryl. I know that I think they posted something about it on the blog. I know Beth talked about it on Godless Bitches. They did an entire episode where they focused on that issue. When Richard Dawkins was here for the Texas Freethought Convention, we had a fundraising dinner, and I was talking to him about it at the time because she was at a hospital in Birmingham.
I think but it was in Galway that she.
Okay. And yeah, at that time he was actually looking for it. I don't know enough about the law and the specifics of the case because I've been focused on other things to get up on a soapbox and rain down fire and brimstone. I wish that I did because I feel, based on what I do know, that it's deserved, that this is the sort of tragedy that should immediately get to changing the law and changing how we handle these situations. I'm not the guy to talk about it. I should be, but I'm not.
Okay. Well, it seems to be doing just that. Last Wednesday, or last week, we had 20,000 people around the country protesting, trying to get legislation in to clear up the kind of grey area of that abortion has in Ireland. And we're going to be doing it every Wednesday outside the government buildings until that is brought in.
Outstanding.
That's this huge, we're expecting a good turnout every week.
This is the kind of thing, I mean, I don't want to kind of overstate it, but it's the kind of thing that I don't necessarily think we should make a statue of her, but it's the kind of thing that I'd like to see memorialized in statues. I'm a fan of kind of tradition and, you know, setting up things so that we don't forget, because I've seen the problems of what happens when we do forget. You know, when the free thought movement, like I was talking about before, kind of thinks they've got it all beat so they don't focus on it. You need to kind of remember how we got here, and this is one of those cases that shouldn't be forgotten.
Yeah, and this whole situation arose because we just laid back back 30 years ago. We had this whole started when a 14-year-old girl was refused the right to travel to England for an abortion because and she was suicidal because she was raped and she didn't want to go through with the abortion. So she tried to go over to England, but she was stopped to get the abortion there. She was, I'm not sure the legal term, but she wasn't allowed the right to travel. So there was a huge uproar, and it went to the Supreme Court, and it was ruled that if the woman's life is in danger, then she can have an abortion. But there's it's in the Constitution that you cannot have an abortion in Ireland. It's either that or just the way it was. It's a very gray area.
That's an interesting question. I'm going to have to get on and talk to my wife a little bit about this because I just did a debate at the Freethought Convention a month and a half ago, on abortion, and it was against another atheist, somebody from the secular pro-life movement. And she makes no exceptions for rape or incest, and the only exception is for the life of the mother. And I wonder if the mother's life is at risk because of suicide, whether or not she would think that should count. I'm wondering, I don't know what she'd think about that.
Yeah, and you also have to consider where is it, should it be the life of the mother, or should it be for the health of the mother? How far is it in your death before you can say, okay, let's terminate?
Yeah, I think she, if I'm remembering correctly, her position is only, you know, for the life and for serious imminent risk. But anyway, no reason to talk about her position here.
Yeah. All right, guys, we do have a caller waiting. It's Tenoro in Louisiana. You're on.
Am I coming in clear?
Yep, loud and clear. So ask your question.
Excellent. Well, first I wanted to offer my compliments to Matt and Marty. I follow both of them on YouTube, and I follow Matt over on their website. You do outstanding work, both of you do. But my question is something that I think Matt has had some experience in, because I was following all of the rigmarole from the Texas Board of Education, how they tried to rewrite history and failed miserably to do so thanks to squanderous spending. In Louisiana, we have similar issues going on with Bobby Jindal and his ridiculous voucher program. I'm a follower of, I shouldn't say a follower in the sense that I allow him to lead, but I am following the works of Zach Coplin, who I believe you've had on one of your shows. He is a student activist against Bobby Jindal's creationist legislation. He started the activism against the ironically named Louisiana Science Education Act, and now he's going after Bobby Jindal's voucher program that offers public funding to private creationist schools. And my question...
Is that the Loch Ness Monster bullshit?
Yes. Yes, it is, unfortunately.
I don't know whether to laugh or cry about that.
Well imagine really living in the state. I know how you feel. I don't have any kids myself, but I don't want to raise kids in this kind of educational system. Go ahead.
Excuse me. I can say something as a science teacher.
Please.
Yes. Fuck you.
Yeah, but yeah, the question.
Go ahead.
I know you were going to say something about that.
No. Go ahead with your question.
Well, my question is simple: I know you guys have had issues with creationists attempting to infect the educational system. I was going to ask a very simple question: is what would you recommend for someone living in Louisiana who's dealing with an almost identical issue, only it's our governor doing it?
Yeah, and actually, our governor was actually ultimately responsible for a lot of it too, because our school board is elected, but he appoints the head of the school board, and so for a while it was Don McElroy, dentist who didn't care about science. Let me tell you what the ACA did early on. There were school book hearings. And there are individuals who were there. I wasn't even a part of the group at the time when it first started. So first thing is definitely get involved, go to any hearings that are out there and make this stuff public. But Texas has a great organization, and even though you're in Louisiana, I highly recommend you contact them. Texas Freedom Network is specifically designed. They've got a blog. They monitor what's going on with the Texas School Board. They are active. They know everything about how to make this situation better. And it may be the case that you could work with them to set up the Louisiana Freedom Network, some sort of branch of the Texas Freedom Network in Louisiana. They are fabulous. I don't even spend as much time focusing on the school board issues, because all I end up doing is pointing people back to TFN, saying, hey, here, sign up for their blog, sign up for their newsletter, donate money and help support them, and pay attention because they're going to put out alerts on when there are hearings and there are people that are going to need to show up to those things. I hope you can get something similar in Louisiana and in every state that needs it, which is probably every state.
Well, I'm at a slight disadvantage here on the north on the northern end of Louisiana because all the action is taking place down south. Mm-hmm. We had a free thought organization here in town up until about 2 or 3 months ago, and all of the central persons of the group moved to other places, and we now have no group left in this part of the state that I'm aware of. So we're just a bunch of floating individuals over here in Louisiana.
My good friend Jerry DeWitt is over there, and I think he's northern Louisiana as well. I seriously though, even if you're not going to be in the area where the action is, contacting the Texas Freedom Network for advice is way better than asking me for advice. I wish it wasn't the case. I wish I had the answers for everything. But as I wanted to tell Matt, the Scotsman who likes to talk, sometimes the answer is I don't know. And I don't know is, by the way, a wonderful answer because the immediate follow-up is I don't know, but let's see if we can find out. And in this case, organizations like Texas Freedom Network are the way to go.
Okay. Well, that's all I had. Thank you. Thank you for all you guys for your work, especially Matt and Marty, whose work I am most intimately familiar with. And since I'm so close to Texas, I would love the chance to drive out and have dinner with the ACA sometime.
No, come on over. Daryl Ray's going to be here this Sunday for a lecture, and he'll do the TV show. We'll have dinner afterwards. And Jamie Kilstein's actually going to be in town doing a comedy show somewhere around town. So it'll be a good weekend to drive over. Oh, except
It would be fantastic. Yeah, that bit is short notice. It would be best for me if I could catch one of those days when Aaron is in town, because I have been in live discussions with him, and he's fantastic too.
Not sure when Aaron will get back down, but when he does, we'll be sure and try to get him back on.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't want to take up the rest of your show, so you guys have a good one.
Right.
I'll be listening on the chat.
See ya. Nice talk. Good to have you on the show, mate.
Okay, guys, we do have another caller waiting, but you guys had a few questions first. So we'll go to team questions, and then I'll line up the caller.
Okay.
Guys?
Okay. Live Life, you wanted to go first?
Yeah, then Marty and me.
Live Life? Okay, we seem to have lost Live
Life. No, I'm here.
Oh, right. Cool.
Yeah. I had my mind up, sorry, but that was me. I'm a big advocate, Matt, against this war on Christmas, this supposed war on Christmas since the season is coming. This war on Christmas was created, of course, we know, by the right side, the conservative Christians. And now Fox News is starting earlier than before because, Fox is so, fair and balanced. What's your thoughts on it? I just want to get your thoughts on the war of Christmas. Especially when it just happened in California and whatnot. I just want to get your thoughts on that real quick.
Yeah, I wish we didn't have company right now and that my webcam was wireless because I could walk you downstairs. Beth's already posted pictures on Facebook. We actually do Christmas. Here at my house, there is a beautiful big white tree. It's all decorated with, peppermint red and white stuff. The whole downstairs looks like Christmas threw up. We didn't put up a whole lot of outside lights, but there's a few and stuff. I like Christmas. I think Christmas is the kind of holiday that if it didn't already exist, it'd be a pretty good idea to invent. For the people who don't like Christmas, hey, great. I celebrate whatever you want for whatever reason you want, and don't celebrate if you don't want to. My thing is, when I look at Christmas, I love it when the Christians talk about how Christmas has been secularized. Because if you make a list of all the things that you think of when you think of Christmas, Jesus might make the top five. Because you've got trees and presents and Frosty and Santa Claus and, snow and snowmen and icicles. And you just, or if you're in Australia, I guess you think of the beach. But the things that we think about and the things that we celebrate, there are really two Christmases. Yes, it's unfortunate that we use the same name for both of them, but I don't know that there'd be any movement to change the name. So my war on Christmas is pretty simple. I like having fun. I like days off work. I like hanging out with people that I love. I like eating food. I like having a good time, and I'm going to do that. And if it happens to be that I get all of this because of some ancient tradition in somebody's religion, well, you know, maybe that's not ideal, but it's okay. The war on Christmas nonsense is not really so much a war on Christmas as it is a war on the abuse of Christmas with respect to non-Christians. Just as it's, you know, we go after any religious preference that marginalizes citizens. Now, there are some people who I think have gone too far. There's the guy who I won't name from the Foolish Atheist show down in San Antonio who's off his rocker and has sued over everything and is now, I guess, offering up stars or something for a nativity scene. He's just nuts. I don't see any war on Christmas in the way that the news portrays it. What I see are people rightly standing up against religious preference and say there are people who don't want anything to do with Christmas, and that's fine. They don't have the right to not see Christmas decorations or whatever. They don't have the right. You don't have a right to not be offended, at least not in the U.S. It's kind of a non-issue for me. To the extent that I'm involved in a war on Christmas, I'm going to keep having fun at Christmas time.
No, I totally agree. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I celebrate Christmas too, in a secular way, of course, but.
Yeah, and people, you know, my wife gets mad because my wife is a Christmas nut. And when she started posting stuff, people are like, well, you're not celebrating Christmas, you're celebrating the solstice. And she's like, fuck you, I'm celebrating Christmas, Xmas. Well, then that's got Christ in it. Well, you know, Thursday's got Thor in it, but I'm getting rid of Thursday.
No, I totally agree. Only if they knew basically the history of Christmas with the winter solstice and that, you had none of the disciples that ever, you know, talked about or celebrate the birth of Jesus. And the first recorded, I believe, the nativity of Jesus was back in 336 AD, I believe, in the Roman Empire. It was basically just to combat the winter solstice since it was so popular over there. So it's like there's a lot of contradictions you can go over with these Christians here to, you know, explain exactly the birth of Christ if you want to really go with that. So,
and you go with that's an important time frame from, you know, like you got Council of Nicaea in 325, and then you've got this kind of paganizing and Romanizing of Christianity. You know, it's one of those things where we were talking about language before. The meaning of words changes. It's why dictionary. I don't look at dictionaries as authorities. Dictionaries just describe usage. And you can look at the same for not just the definitions of words, but memes and ideas and these bigger concepts about religion, because Christianity today is nothing like what Christianity used to be at the beginning. And that's rather strange if they have this unchanging God that they believe in.
Yep. All right, I'm done. Thanks.
Okay. I have a question, some background first, perhaps. I'm going to try to keep it very brief. I grew up in Sweden, still live there. I grew up in an atheist household, even by Swedish standards. So my parents basically broke off all ties with the church. They didn't even play along for traditional reasons. I wasn't baptized, for example. They didn't get married in a church, things like that. And religion was never discussed in my home. It was just, it didn't exist. And every now and then, I mean, obviously I picked up stuff about it, but it was like, oh, it's just something that people believe in. Oh, okay, we don't. Yeah, okay. Nothing more than that. And in school, I started learning more about it, of course, and it was taught in a very good way. It was taught in a non-confessional way, and I actually found it very interesting and started to explore it a little more. And I know now in advance that my parents thought it was well, it was great that I actually wanted to explore it and even read the Bible at age 8 or 9, something like that. What happened was I was halfway through Genesis, and then I was a hardcore atheist because I was done being insulted because I was just too intelligent for that at that age, is how I felt. Like, how can anyone believe this? This is stupid. But anyway, I kept being this really hardcore atheist. Like, I almost could have said, I know that this is bullshit. Until I started studying, I suppose you could say studying epistemology. It was covered in a class I took at the university. And that's only when I started realizing that I'm not justified in saying I know there is no God. And then a few years later, I come across this little show on the internet called The Atheist Experience, where they basically say the same thing. Like, okay, atheism is the rejection of belief based on the fact that there is no evidence. And you know, okay, great, that fits my position. But then you said something at some point that you felt that in any practical sense of the word no, you know there is no God, and you wouldn't argue for it or whatever. But I'm curious, how do you defend that?
Okay. First of all, I wish we had more time. One of these days we'll have to sit down and talk because I want to hear more about kind of your transition,
sure.
Or when they wasn't a non-transition, but for transition from not having any religious knowledge and background to an interest in it. I love that. And it's one of the reasons that I'm an advocate of comparative religions courses in schools, and I've been an advocate of Bible courses in schools. The problem is that in the U.S., every time somebody suggests a curriculum for a Bible course, it is a proselytizing mess. And my solution is not one that people would accept, which is always hire an atheist to come in to teach a Bible course. People are not just not going to be happy about that.
No.
But on the believe no issue, I'll give kind of the quickest rundown I can. And by the way, it's worth pointing out once again that I'm not an expert or credentialed expert in anything. I'm just a guy that like to think. I am a huge fan devotee of Hume. I think you could probably map most of my philosophical positions directly back to Hume, with a couple of minor exceptions.
I'm a cool armchair philosopher, so I don't I recognize the name, but that's it.
Oh, go read some Hume.
Okay,
just do it. It's better than the Bible, and you enjoyed that. So
I think everything.
I think that. This is one of those things where we're talking about words and their usage again. I came up with very specific definitions for belief and knowledge that I use, and I try to explain them when the need arises to avoid confusion. And to me, belief is just the acceptance of a proposition as true or most likely true. And you can be convinced. Belief is the result of being convinced or becoming convinced. You can be convinced for good reasons or bad reasons, and you can be convinced to varying degrees of certainty. Philosophers have struggled with the definition of knowledge, which is curious because it's a word we toss around all the time. I know this, I know that, and so there are different kind of frameworks and different contexts in which you can look at the word knowledge. For the longest time, one of the most popular philosophical definitions of knowledge was justified true belief. And I bought into that for quite a long time. And I don't think it's horrible. I just don't really think that it applies in a big meaningful sense. Knowledge is to me a subset of belief. You can believe things to varying degrees of certainty. And obviously we justified true belief would pretty much equate to absolute certainty that we are positive. And I find that really useless. I find that in most cases the idea of absolute certainty just doesn't apply. And yet, because in a colloquial sense we use the word knowledge, or we say I know this and I know that all the time, that means that there's another context for knowledge. And to me, the best definition of that is a belief held to such a high degree of certainty that it would be worldview altering to discover that it was wrong. So my knowledge there doesn't mean truth, and it doesn't mean absolute certainty. It's just, of the things that I'm pretty damn sure about, I'm really, really sure about this. The only places where absolute certainty applies, as far as I'm concerned, are esoteric knowledge, things, you know, I know about myself, labels. My name is Matt. It's tautology to say that I know that this is true. And the logical absolutes, which I'm probably not going to have time to go into all that. So when I say that I pretty much know that there's no God, what I'm saying is that I'm an atheist, so I do not believe a God exists. I do not believe any God exists. But I'm also an anti-theist in the sense that I believe that there are no gods, and I'm really kind of nitpicking there. Because what I'm saying is that two things, and I believe this to such a high degree of certainty that I'm okay, you know, in conversation saying I know this, but I don't defend it because there's too much confusion about the word no, and there would be a big, long discussion. So basically, I believe very, very strongly to the point that it would be worldview-altering to discover that there were God. And the reasons for this are that there's two possibilities: either God exists or he doesn't exist. Boom. Set aside that it doesn't exist. Of the gods that could possibly exist, there are gods that interact with reality in some detectable way, and there are gods that do not. The ones that do not are logically indistinguishable from the ones that don't exist, and so we toss them away. It's one of those things where if I'm wrong and there is some God that doesn't interact with reality, I know that that God doesn't exist, but I'm not absolutely certain because it's logically the same. So for the gods that do interact with reality, which, by the way, applies to pretty much, well, not every, but pretty much every religion on the planet, you know, the Christian God, these people don't just believe in the abstract deist God. They believe in an interventionist God. And so that means that we should be able to test those claims. If a God manifests in reality in any way, which it must have for them to detect it and have this idea in the first place, or they must think that that's the case, not that it must actually be the case, then we can. And in every case where we've actually tested this, it has failed. And then when you look at, for example, I'd recommend Vic Stinger's book on God, the Failed Hypothesis, where he takes a look at the various types of gods that could exist, demonstrates that those gods are inconsistent with the reality that we experience. And when we try to envision what sort of reality we would be living in if there were a God, it doesn't match. And so I am left, after examining these claims, not with a position that I'm absolutely certain that there is nothing out there anywhere that could ever qualify as a god, but just that the various gods that have been proposed almost certainly don't exist. The evidence either doesn't support it, and by the way, this claim of absence of evidence is not evidence of absence, is wrong. It's right in what it means, because what it meant when Sagan said it was just because you don't have evidence for something doesn't mean that it absolutely doesn't exist. But, as Vic Singer had pointed out, absence of evidence, or an absence of evidence for a claim is evidence for the absence of that claim, especially when evidence would be expected. If you tell me you've got a dead cat in your trunk, and I open the trunk and I find no evidence to support it, then I have evidence against your claim that you have a dead cat in your trunk. Oh, and I apologize to my wife. I should have used something other than a cat. She'll be mad. But that's basically the nutshell of how I get to saying that I pretty much know, I probably should rephrase it as, I pretty much know that no relevant, identifiable, manifesting God exists. You know, maybe some deistic notion out there. Who knows? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, sure. And that's pretty much the position I end up in right now. I can entertain some God claims, like one that plays from behind the scenes and only interacts in ways that are indistinguishable from coincidence, for example. But then, why believe that?
Yep.
So
I had a really good email. There's a guy who's called several times over the last couple of weeks, talking about that we're, he thinks science has confirmed or pretty much confirmed that we're actually living in a virtual reality. And,
oh, not that guy, not that guy.
And he kept referring to, you know, quantum physics and collapsing the waveform and how this necessarily needed God. I got a really good email from somebody else who's been listening to this and evidently smacking their head against the wall. And he pointed out...
I did.
Oh, was that you?
No,
oh, no.
But I totally smacked my head against the wall, too, because there I've done videos guy. About the quantum mumbo-jumbo
yeah.
crowd, and yeah.
Well, this individual actually helped me out quite a bit. I hope I don't have to deal with that particular call again, because it's not something I'm an expert on. It's not something I'm even that interested in. I don't. He's overstating the case as far as I'm concerned, but I can't make that case. But this individual who wrote me actually pointed out that that basically if his claims were correct, then we would kind of be in the position where everything would appear collapsed. And so from our perspective, we'd have no reason to ever posit the collapses in the first place if there was some God mind out there collapsing waveform. Or it would appear at random because this God isn't collapsing every waveform, he's collapsing them, you know, however he chooses. So it would appear random, and this would be indistinguishable from the case where there's no mind, no external God mind doing this. So it's kind of a really, you know, easy kind of checkmate for that argument, but it was fun to have somebody actually explain it in a way that didn't put me to sleep.
Okay, guys, we've got a caller who's been very, very patient here, so we'll let him in. It's David in Australia.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
I'm a big fan of the Atheist Experience. It's my first time listening to Trolling Logic, though. They said I'm Australian, so I'm not entirely up to date with the most recent developments here. But I did have a question about sort of the post-election flood, I suppose, of secession petitions, where a number of Bible Belt states basically said, you know, we want to leave. We don't want to be part of the United States anymore. I know on Slashdot there was a big thread about it, and a number of people who said they were atheists said things along the lines of, sure, go ahead. We don't want you here anyway. You know, you're screwing everything up. Maybe you should just leave. And I suppose I'm sort of wondering what your thoughts on that are, particularly as Matt lives in Texas, which is one of the prominent states. What's his thoughts on Jesus land and the United States going their separate ways?
Okay. I'm sorry, my audio cut off for a minute, and it took me a minute to figure out you were talking about the secession of Texas. I posted right after people announced the petitions to secede that Texas could go ahead and secede, but Austin would remain a part of the United States. I talked before about how Austin isn't Texas. We've got the capital here and the governor, and we've got I guess a small dose of fundamentalists, but this is really a liberal hippie town with a nude beach on the lake and people playing music and smoking weed and a college town of 50,000 students. Secession, I don't think is anything that could ever realistically happen, or at least not without some other major changes. There was a group that wanted to move all the Christians to South Carolina and have South Carolina secede. And for amusement, I'm in favor of that. But in reality, I'm not. And there's one kind of softball reason and one hard reason. And one is that I care about people, and not everybody stays a Christian. But more importantly, I'm concerned about the indoctrination of kids. And so if you go off and make your little secessionist Christian state, there's not a whole lot I can actually do about it. We've got to have discussions about where do we draw lines about how much intervention we could do, which is a discussion we're having about where should the U.S. Intervene in other countries. And there's a lot of debates to be had there about what we shouldn't do. And I don't really think that I want to be having that about, you know, something like South Carolina. I'd rather just keep working to fix the problems that we can fix as best we can, try and find some point of agreement and change the world around them. This is the way that, I mean, if you look through the Bible, Christianity is as barbaric, absurd, hateful, and divisive as Islam in what's actually in the book. And so why are the religions vastly different in how they practice? That's not to slight all Muslims. There are some progressive Muslims. I've seen them on TV getting tattoos. But the thing is, one of them is an older religion that was dragged kicking and screaming towards the new. I mean, I think there's probably still a century behind or more on some things, but they're closer. And Islam is a younger religion that has been kind of insular. And so I think we changed the world around those communities, and they're forced to change. And also, as sad as it is, I think we have to wait for a generation or two to die off, and we keep educating people. The Internet is probably the thing that's going to change the world the most with regard to religion. I mean, just look at what we're doing right now. So I'm not worried about secession. I don't think it's a reality. But I wouldn't want it to happen, because I don't know how you go about defining who needs to secede. You know, I'm not a big fan of states' rights. I'm not a libertarian. I understand that, you know, different communities can have different standards on some things, and states can have, you know, different views on some things. But we're also the United States, and I think that we should maybe focus more on the first word and less on the second.
I want to expand on that
very
real quick.
Answer.
All right. Okay, well, if you don't mind. Yeah, very quick. Well, I'm just going to say we're just going to Dave's going to leave the chat now, and we've got another caller coming up, so make the point quick.
Thanks,
David.
Only seconds.
All right. Thank you.
You got 50 states now, people in 50 states that have petitions going for this secession. So basically what it boils down to, the numbers show that it's only 0.2%, I believe, of the American population that are signing these petitions. Now, one point I would like to make up that people don't make at all is that, hey, listen, if you think society is immoral because of your Bible and you still are racist towards the president, what you can do is you can actually denounce or renounce your citizenship in the United States. So if you think you have it so bad over here, go ahead, renounce your citizenship. I have no problem with that. That's all I want to say.
Okay, got 13 heathens joining the call, long-time friend of ours. You there, 13?
I'm here.
Okay, you managed to get on, so ask your question.
My mic coming through okay?
Yeah, it's coming through great, so just ask your question.
Okay, great. Matt, I've got a question for you. Back ages ago, in one of the older episodes, you referenced that after you got out of the military, you decided to look into other religions, and the one that you cited specifically was Scientology, of all things. In my proverbial path to atheism, it was reading up on Scientology that was the last nail in the coffin for my former religious beliefs. And I'm wondering if you had a similar perspective in that, looking at it and saying, what would this look like in 2,000 years, then apply that to your former beliefs?
Yeah, that's a good point. I actually did one of the first shows I did back in 2005, I think, was kind of a deconstruction of Scientology. I think it's a good case study in how some religions are formed. I don't think it's a good case study for how all religions are formed. I don't think that I think there are some conspiracy theory nuts who think that Christianity was formed similar to Scientology. I've heard some of them talk about how the Pope and the Masons got together and invented Christianity out of whole cloth in like the 4th century. And that's such a mind-numbingly stupid thing to say, because where did you get a Pope in the first place if they're just inventing Christianity then? But
well, it wouldn't go that far.
Yeah. But I think that there's a lot to learn from this, because, first of all, I've said many times, I'm a skeptic first and an atheist second. I'm an atheist because I'm a skeptic, because there's no evidence. As soon as there's evidence, great, I'm no longer an atheist. I will always be a skeptic. I can't think of anything that would make me stop being a skeptic, which is one of the reasons why I think that giving people the tools of critical thinking and skepticism is probably the best way to eliminate you know, all sorts of irrational thinking, including religion. But having shining, bizarre examples like Scientology is that we can point to and say, look, how is this different? Let's find the little ways that it's different. And then once we do, if you think those little differences are enough to justify your religion, let's examine those and see if they actually are. And I thought, you know, this goes back to what I said before. I thought we were actually getting there, and then we had a Mormon run for president. And, you know, Mormonism is like, if you list the craziness of modern religions as far as, like, how unbelievable they should be when viewed with any sort of critical scrutiny, Scientology should be at the top, and Mormonism should be right there underneath it, if not, you know, maybe with it or above it. I mean, you know that this is a con man who has, just invented a fiction of a language, even peering into a hat with seer stones and dictating this, and then, you know, most people are familiar with the story, and then you look at the specific beliefs. But what I noticed, because I thought all this about Mormonism, what I noticed is, I keep running across Mormons who don't believe any of that stuff. I keep running across Mormons who they're blind to the problems with the history of their religion, and they're blind to the problems of some of the doctrines of their religion, and they're so blind to them that they aren't a part of their Mormonism. They've kind of separated these things out. I don't know. It's one of the grand advantages that religions have, that they're able to evolve and change to respond to the criticisms of their religion. Scientology is rare in that it has this cult-like isolation that prevents it from being examined really by everybody. I mean, you've got great sites like Clambake that go through the details. But I don't know that it's enough in the public eye it should be in the public eye as a way to educate people, but I don't know that it is.
Well, also, in the case of Scientology, one thing that they've actually been doing is they have an L. Ron Hubbard museum. And in this museum, they've gone to great lengths to try and prove some of his ridiculous claims, one of which was that he claimed that he was a blood brother of the Blackfoot tribe. And in that case, they actually went out to the reservation there and bribed somebody into stealing a headdress to bring back to their museum. So you have these deliberate falsehoods, and then you juxtapose those kind of falsehoods onto some of the lore of some other religions and think what lengths might they have gone through in the past.
Mm-hmm. So before we run out of time, since we had talked about the war on Christmas and everything, Beth just walked in, and for the people with the camera that have video, you can see that she's even all decked out with peppermint necklaces and candy cane pants and is all ready for her Christmas fun.
That's great.
Okay, 13, is that your question then?
All set. Have a good one.
All right, thanks again for calling in.
Thanks, Mark.
Bye.
Okay.
All right.
Ask a question.
If it's very, very quick, we've only got 3 minutes left now.
Okay, my question is, you were mentioning your studies earlier, and I'm just wondering, who amongst your studies did you see as an inspiration? And what was the main problem you identified with the religion to create the atheist experience?
Okay, first quick correction. I didn't create the atheist experience. That show's been around for 14, 15
okay.
years.
Sorry, can I rephrase that to join the atheist experience?
Yeah, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure I got that out there, because I end up being, you know, the public face of the atheist experience. There's a lot of other people who started it, and there's a lot of other people who are doing great work on the show and filling in for me when I'm not even there. So it's, I know I tend to get a lot of laudits, but other people did the work. I'm just pretty much doing what I'm doing here, which is talk. The people that I most looked up to, Robert Greene Ingersoll, Voltaire, David Hume. That's from, you know, the historical perspective, you know, the thinkers of previous centuries. Modern thinkers, infidels.org was actually hugely critical to my transitioning from religion. And so there are people like Jeffrey J. Lauder and Richard Carrier, who I'm happy to say I'm friends with now. You know, these people just posted things out on the internet, and yet it changes lives. And it's one of the reasons why I'm, you know, while I didn't create the Atheist Experience, once I got there, what we started pushing for was live streaming, posting it to YouTube, getting as much information out as we could, and it lives for as long as the internet is going to live. Yeah, those are the people who meant the most. I mean, Dan Barker, Carl Sagan. I can't say Dawkins because I wasn't familiar with Dawkins until really late in the transition period. But I've come to greatly respect the work that he's doing there, and happy to work with him when I get a chance. It's nice because I've always heard that you don't meet your heroes. And yet, for the most part, the heroes that I have met have become my friends, and I'm happy to have actually met them. But I'm more happy that they were doing this and caring about other people. There's a comedian who's a friend of mine now, too, Keith Lowell Jensen, and he's got a bit that I won't murder by doing it here. But he basically, at the convention, asked, you know, if you used to be religious, raise your hand. And the hands are up everywhere. And he basically responds, I think we were fucking worth talking to. Encountering the people who would claim that it's pointless to talk to religious people or try to debate them. It's absolutely not pointless. My email box is full of people saying that they used to be a fundamentalist, or they used to be an atheist but not a skeptic, or they were a skeptic but not an atheist, or they had this belief or that belief, and now it's gone because of the work we've done on the show and because of us pointing them to people like Hume, Voltaire, Ingersoll, Carrier, you know, Sagan, everybody.
Brilliant. Thanks, Matt.
Okay, I think we can wrap it up there. Thank you very much to Matt for turning up and being a fantastic show. So everyone,
thank you guys so much for having me.
Oh, no problem at all. So everyone, yeah, thumbs up in the chat room for Matt, and I'd like to thank my co-host, Martimer. No, Martimer's not there. Empty.
Oh, I'm here.
Hey, guys, thanks for coming to the show tonight. Pretty cool time.
Yeah. Kitch?
Hey, guys, thanks for turning out, and I'd like to thank Matthew for coming on. Yeah. Or Matt, sorry.
Right. Oh, thank us both. It was fun.
And yeah. Thanks to Love Life for coming in at the last minute as well.
No, anytime, man. Matt, great job, guys. From Logic, thanks for bringing me in again. I do appreciate it. It was fun. And, can I promote my show or no?
Yep, go ahead, promote your show.
So a lot of you guys already know about the Skeptic Fan Show. It's a new show. We've been around for 4 months. Me and Negation run the show. It's basically just skeptical thinking type of forum, so it's really cool. Matt, I would love to have you on the show one time. I think I just sent you a Skype contact, so you know, it'd be great to have you on. But yeah, thanks very much, guys. I appreciate it, man. Appreciate it.
Okay. So we're back on Saturday, isn't it, Kitch?
Yes, we're back on Saturday at 7 o'clock, as far as I'm aware.
6 o'clock.
We're on six o'clock.
So, and you can tell us a quick word about that guest, because you're a big fan of the guy.
Yes, we're on with author and chairperson of the Atheist Ireland, Michael Nugent, who's a really cool guy and really nice, and he's really knows his stuff, and he's a very good public speaker.
Yeah, so there'll be probably a lot of talk about the recent abortion case and things like that. So everyone, please go. Sorry, are you going to finish, Kitch?
I was just going to say that, and we're going to be talking about, hopefully, the push for the separation of church and state,
okay,
which is getting huge amount of clout here in Ireland.
Okay. And then on Sunday, our live Pwnage makes a return after a long break. We're looking at Harun Yahya and the weird video with the botched up plastic surgery woman. That's the only way we can describe it. So, everyone, go to the playground below. There's Facebook, the YouTube, there's show will be uploaded within the next few hours, and you've got your iTunes, everything down there. So don't forget to sub, and we'll see you all next week. Good night, everyone.